Oh my God, you're such a good podcaster. Oh, it's not me, it's Alexander. Well, who the hell is Alexander? And come to think of it, what even is this podcast? All that and more on the premiere episode of ESC 101. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to ESC 101. This is your home of Eurovision history and obscurity, where we take a look at the Eurovision Song Contest throughout the years to uncover the story behind the world's largest music competition. My name is Alexander, and allow me to introduce you to ESC 101. So, what exactly is this podcast? Well, this is a podcast that takes a look at Eurovision history throughout the years of the Eurovision Song Contest. We're going to be taking a look at all sorts of different things, not just the entries or the artists, but things like the host, the interval act, the staging, the venues, maybe a little bit of controversies, some of the countries that have participated, and a whole lot more. This is a podcast that looks into the story of the Eurovision Song Contest from perspectives of obscurity. So rather than mainly focusing on the contest that's about to happen or about recent entries or recent dramas, we're going to be focusing on a lot of different historical elements of the contest. Now, I've scoured a lot of Eurovision podcasts, and there's not a lot of content out there that talks about the real nitty-gritty details of Eurovision. There's a lot of hidden content that Eurovision has had over the years that a lot of fans don't talk about. Things like the various interval acts. Well, what's their story? How did they get to Eurovision and what happened after that? Or the hosts, did they host multiple times? And if so, what were their styles like? What was their life before and after Eurovision? These little stories that help bring the elements of Eurovision together, I think, deserves a platform. And I'd like to bring that to you, to talk about the things about Eurovision that are sometimes forgotten and not even talked about. And if you're anything like me, a history buff and a lover of Eurovision, then I think you will find a few things interesting. You might be able to also improve your trivia skills. So if you're looking to improve your Eurovision trivia skills, then this is definitely the podcast for you. And if you're not overly familiar with the Eurovision Song Contest, then I encourage you to stick around as well. Because I think one of the best ways to learn about something is to understand its origins and where it comes from, and to see how Eurovision went from a single camera pointing at a curtain to a multi-light show with multiple cameras and a rock concert style of performance. I think it's important. And so I'd like to bring this to the table to talk about things like the postcards, the orchestras, the host, stages, interval acts, and a whole lot more. I'd also like to talk about the various countries, how they use national selections or internal selections, and how their fortunes changed over time. And of course, there's a whole load of content that's going to be out there. Eurovision's been going on for more than 60 years now. In fact, we're almost approaching 70 years at this point. And there's so much history out there that, you know, I obviously can't do it in a single episode. But I think if we can take a look at little elements along the way, then I think we can maybe get a bit of a deeper appreciation for Eurovision. And that's something that I want to share with all of you. So to answer the first question, who the hell is Alexander? Well, I'm Alexander. I am a Canadian Eurovision fan. I've been a Eurovision fan since 2017, And I first discovered the Eurovision Song Contest while I was completing my first university degree. I did an honors Bachelor of Arts in History, taking courses in 20th century European history, talking about things like European integration and 20th century events that caused the development of the European Union and sort of other global events that impacted the wider world. And one of the seminars I took was European integration in terms of music, culture, sports, all these sorts of things. And one of the things we talked about was Eurovision. And when I first heard about Eurovision, I remember something in the back of my mind about hearing about Eurovision once, but I couldn't recall it. And so I was curious to learn a little bit more about it. And so I looked up on the Wikipedia page, like a list of winners. And one of the artists that came up was ABBA. And I've been a huge fan of ABBA ever since I was a little kid. And to see ABBA on the list of winners was amazing. I'm thinking, well, this contest must have something going forward if ABBA won it. And I go down the list even further and I see Céline Dion's on the list. And if you know anything about Canadian culture, you know that Céline Dion is either famous or infamous, depending on who you ask. And to see her as a winner for Eurovision really piqued my interest. And there's a couple other names that I recognized as well, like Trina and the Waves and sort of all these sorts of different artists that have been scattered along the way. And I remember part of the seminar, we were to do a final project, and I decided to do my final project on block voting because I was really fascinated to see the ways in which countries were integrating with each other culturally. And so I decided to choose USSR countries, the way that they voted. And of course, if you're a Eurovision fan, then you'll probably know that Russia and former USSR countries like to swap votes a lot. It was really fascinating to put all these results together. And ever since then, I've been quite a huge fan of Eurovision. I first watched Eurovision in 2017, kind of via YouTube, but not really. I didn't know what a VPN was at the time. And being in Canada, we weren't broadcasting the show live. So unfortunately, I wasn't able to like truly watch it live. But I was very fortunate that I was able to actually go to Europe the next year. And I was able to actually go to Lisbon in 2018 and watch the show live in the arena for the grand final jury show. But the very first contest that I actually watched on YouTube was 2015 and 1980. So I watched 2015 because it was the earliest edition of the contest that I could find that was the most modern, that didn't require a VPN. And I don't remember exactly why I watched 1980. I think it was because I really liked the songs. I was looking at like various recaps and I'm thinking, ooh, 1980 has a lot of good songs that I really enjoy. So I watched 1980, and of course, Morocco was part of 1980 at the time, and I really enjoyed the Moroccan entry, and I'm just thinking, like, what are the borders of Eurovision? This is, like, really weird, because obviously Morocco is not part of Europe, and it's just this, like, weird thing to have a North African country in Eurovision, and so my curiosity for Eurovision really sprouted from there. And going back to my experience in 2018... seeing it live in person versus on TV or YouTube is like two totally different things. Not only because you don't have the camera and the magic of editing to make it all fancy, but even just the sound, hearing it reverberate in the arena, seeing the fans for yourself and hearing them sing along or clap along, it's a totally different atmosphere. And I was very fortunate that I was able to sit in the part of the arena that was just behind the green room. So I was literally like a stone's throw away from like the Danish contingent or one of the other contingents. I don't remember which ones. I'd have to look back. And I could literally like wave at them. And I'm pretty sure they waved back. I was like, ooh, this is like pretty cool that I get to actually be like so close to the green room. And seeing the show live, I thought was absolutely fantastic. There was an amazing collection of artists, and to hear their sounds live was pretty incredible. And to then watch it in my hotel room on the actual night of the grand final was quite the experience. I remember seeing the stage invader during Cerise's performance, and my jaw literally dropped because I was not expecting this sort of thing to happen. And of course, it doesn't happen every day. But looking back at it now, I really thought about, well, this is stuff that's like history in the making. And I mean, as I developed my love of history and I went on to do other things, my love of Eurovision never waned, and I've watched it every year since. And thankfully, after 2019, they've decided to end the geo-blocking so people in Canada can actually watch the show live. And this year, they even allowed Canadians to vote through the Rest of the World Vote. And to me, I always felt isolated as a Canadian because we don't talk about Eurovision in Canada. There are some Eurovision circles, but they're quite tight-knit. And unless if you have a European background or you have connections to fan groups in the major cities, Eurovision doesn't really exist in Canada. And I was very fortunate that I was able to connect with a few podcasts when I was going through the lull of the Eurovision season after 2019. And there were a few podcasts that I really got in touch with. And one of them was the Douze Point podcast. A little bit of a shameless plug for them. They started a project when COVID started called the Eurovision Forever Project. And this was a project that allowed them to look at every single entry from 1956 to 2022 and to rank and rate every single song based on song performance and fashion. And I was technically the one that gave them the idea because I wanted them to do something in COVID times, because instead of having a Eurovision Song Contest in 2020, they canceled it and put on some kind of other show. And I didn't want the podcast to kind of go off into the sunset because COVID kind of caught them off guard. And, you know, it was something that really connected me to them. And so I had the honor of becoming the unofficial and then eventually official chief statistician of the Eurovision Forever Project, where I tallied every single score in a spreadsheet and followed them for 2.5 years, taking down every single score. And then at the end of the project, I was invited to do a 2-part episode with them to discuss the results and to show what songs they liked, what songs they didn't like. So of course, if you're interested in seeing that, you can look up Douze Point Podcast and you can scroll down to, I think it was like episode 140s, 150s, something along those lines. It hasn't been too far, but if you go back down the list and you'll see like Eurovision Forever, the facts, you'll see those episodes with me and you'll get to hear my enthusiasm as I get to announce the results of Eurovision Forever to determine whether or not the podcast actually agrees with the Eurovision Song Contest or if they absolutely hate it. And I won't give any spoilers, so you'll have to go ahead and listen to their episode and also give them a follow as well. I think the Douze Point Podcast is quite a good podcast. They've done a really fantastic job with the Eurovision Forever series. And of course, now that that's kind of over and they're getting back into, I say a usual routine, but it's been 2.5 years. What is a usual routine? They continue to do the good work that a lot of podcasts do, by providing insight and news into Eurovision space and to provide the entertainment and the connections that I think fans need. And so that was one of the big moments for me after we finished Eurovision Forever, is that I wanted to kind of keep that contribution going, to be part of this community of Eurovision fans that I ended up falling in love with. And doing this podcast has been on my mind for the past year or so, because I felt like there hasn't been a podcast dedicated to Eurovision history specifically. There are some podcasts that talk about like past contests and talk about like the songs and the entries and stuff. But instead, I wanted to put out my own thoughts and my own spin on the Eurovision Song Contest through the obscure things. Things that kind of get left behind or things that aren't really thought about, and to bring these things into a light. And it's one of the things that I love about Eurovision, is that these obscure things bring back memories for some people and represent a legacy that continues on from generation to generation. Eurovision brings countries together. It showcases them on a global stage through original music and hosts a what we should hopefully see as a healthy level of competition. I mean, there are obviously some people that take it a little bit too seriously and can become toxic. But I think that the ideals of Eurovision can show what Europe and the extensions of Europe can do if given the right circumstances and the right platforms. And I think that artists using the Eurovision platform ever since 1956, I think has been vital in the growth and development of Europe as a continent. You know, it's part of healing after the Second World War and getting through the Cold War. All of these moments of fear and destruction, and here comes the Eurovision Song Contest, which was designed in such a way to allow countries to express themselves, but in a friendly and cooperative manner. And I mean, a lot of people look at Eurovision in different ways and say, oh, well, Eurovision does this or does that. And it's this whole multifaceted thing that I think deserves to be explored. I mean, there's a lot of history books out there that talk about Eurovision, but they're very academic based or they're very biased in their politics. I mean, I tried to look up a Eurovision documentary, for example, and most of them are done by British producers. And unfortunately, it's very British centric, where they talk about British entries and British perspectives. And I'm sure there's other Eurovision documentaries and books that are based in other languages. But I like to bring that history to the forefront, to talk about the stories that don't get talked about, and to kind of explore the Eurovision Song Contest in a way that is new yet historic. So I hope you'll stick around to learn alongside me the various stories of the Eurovision Song Contest, to maybe impress your friends with a bit of trivia knowledge, and to learn about how the Eurovision Song Contest has developed over time to become this amazing social event. And with that explanation out of the way, let's turn away from history for a moment and let's talk about some more modern stuff that's been going on in Eurovision news. This is a segment that I like to call the Eurovision Report. And this is a news segment that talks about modern Eurovision news. Of course, if artists have passed away or if there's national finals to be happening, if songs have been selected, that sort of thing. And obviously, this segment will be fluctuating as time goes on. So the closer we get to a contest, the news segment might be a little bit longer, or we might have episodes dedicated entirely to Eurovision news, but it won't be the central focus of the podcast. So this is a disclaimer for the news stories that are going to be featured in the first few Eurovision reports. Some of these news stories are going to be a month or two old, and that's because I recorded some episodes of ESC 101 ahead of the launch date, and some of these news articles are already several weeks to several months old. And so if there are news articles that have been featured from a couple months ago, then you'll understand why they're being mentioned now and not a couple months ago. So bear with me as I put together some news articles that I think should be mentioned. So let's turn now to the Eurovision Report to hear this week's news. New details have emerged over Luxembourg's return to the Eurovision Song Contest in 2024. The story was originally reported on July 3rd of 2023. The national final date has been set for January 27th. Luxembourg's massive announcement has come as a bit of a surprise for some, as Luxembourg had a tendency to use internal selections rather than national finals. There have only been a small handful of times where Luxembourg decided to go with a national final, and much of its history has relied on internal selections, especially with candidates from outside of Luxembourg. This time they're looking for candidates that either have Luxembourgish citizenship or have strong connections to the music scene. Only time will tell to see how Luxembourg will do in its national final selections, to see which artists will represent them in the contest, and to see whether they will qualify for the grand final. This is reported by Orani Abs at weebieblogs.com. There are many news stories indicating the plans for countries to continue their participation in the Eurovision Song Contest. Of course, there will be too many to mention here, but some of the ones that we will indicate include Switzerland, Belgium, and Malta. Malta's rules for their national final have been released and has caused a little bit of controversy amongst Eurovision fans. In a press release given by Malta's public broadcaster, they say, "For the first time in the history of Maltese Eurovision, the public broadcasting services will be giving 12 grants of 5,000 euros for the finalist singers to produce a music video for each finalist song that will be part of the final selection. Besides giving a new look to the MESC finals, this initiative will give local artists an opportunity to express their creativity and to be able to reach local as well as international audiences. The 12 music videos, together with the live performances on stage, will be broadcast next January during the finals of MESC 2024. During the final evening, the vote of the jury and the public will determine the winner, who will be representing Malta in the Swedish city of Malmö during the Eurovision Song Contest 2024. For the first time, they will also be awarded Best Music Video as well as Best New Talent." Some of the controversies lie in the use of music videos and potentially pre-recorded vocals in some of the decision-making processes of Malta's entry into Eurovision, rather than purely live vocals. The Public Broadcasting Service has published the rules and regulations on their website. This is reported by Sanjay Jandani of ESC Today. In international Eurovision news, a story written on May 10th, 2023, talks about the executive supervisor of the Eurovision Song Contest, Martin Østerdahl, attending an EBU and BBC media press conference alongside with the managing director for Liverpool 2023. During the Q&A session, Martin Østerdahl was asked for an update on the inaugural Eurovision Canada. Back in April of 2022, the EBU revealed that there was some interest shown in expanding the Eurovision Song Contest format with Canadian audiences hosting their own version. This was due to be a collaborative project between various organizers. However, in the media conference, Martin Østerdahl had some reservations about the future of Eurovision Canada. He is quoted as saying, "We're still hoping. There's still some avenues that are being looked into, but the original avenue that we pursued on that has sort of come to a bit of a halt, unfortunately." This follows in the footsteps of Eurovision Asia and the American Song Contest, where Eurovision Asia struggled with logistical challenges and the American Song Contest struggled with low ratings. This was reported by Lisa Bird of ESCExtra.com. The Eurovision Song Contest family has lost two artists over the past few weeks. Patricia Bredin, the UK's first Eurovision entrant, had passed away at the age of 88. This was originally reported on August 16th, 2023. And Toto Condugno, the Eurovision winner of 1990 who represented Italy, passed away at the age of 80, and this was reported on August 22nd. Both of these individuals had great impacts on the contest and in the countries that they represented, and their losses will be greatly felt. Both stories on Patricia Bredin and Toto Condugno was reported by Jonathan Votri of weebieblogs.com. This has been the Eurovision Report. And so we have just heard the Eurovision report, the little bit of news that I have for you this week. But before we sign off, I'd like to introduce another segment that I'd like to run in most of the episodes. This one is called Song of the Week. So, of course, if there's an episode that highlights a song, then we won't be having a Song of the Week because that will be the song that we'll be looking at. But Song of the Week is a segment where I choose a Eurovision entry, either one that I find fascinating or interesting or maybe really terrible or outlandish or just confusing. And I talk about it for a little bit. I give some facts about the entry. I give my opinion. And it's just sort of a little bit of a exploration to broaden your palette of Eurovision entries. Maybe there's an entry that you've never heard of before that you're like, oh, I didn't realize this was an entry. Oh, I'd be curious to look that up. Or maybe we'll be looking at some of the classics and reminiscing about some of the old Eurovision songs or even some of the modern classics. Now, I would love to play a segment of the song for you to listen to, but unfortunately, with copyright still being a problem these days, I won't be able to actually insert a portion of the music without risking getting the podcast removed. So I encourage you, whenever I do share a song of the week, if you want, you can look it up on YouTube and listen to the song either before or after, and to experience songs with me, because I think some of these songs are worth listening to and others are really terrible. I mean, I'll give my opinion for each song depending on which category it fits into. So I think, yeah, let's take a look at this week's Song of the Week. So this week's Song of the Week, I have decided to choose the very first winner of the Eurovision Song Contest. That's the entry for Switzerland 1956, the second entry. The song is Refrain, sung by Liz Assia. The composer was Gio Vumar, lyricist Emile Gardaz, and conducted by Fernagio Paggi. And it ended up winning the contest in 1956. Unfortunately, there was no confirmed score, so I don't have any point figures to give you, but it was rumored that there was a score released that was reported in the newspaper La Nuova Stampa, and they quote that the winning song won with a score of 102 points. This was on page 3 of their May 25th, 1956 issue. And the translation in the newspaper, because the newspaper is in Italian, so I wanted to translate it for you. The author's name was A.A., nothing else more apart from that. And it says something along the lines of, in fact, about after a quarter of an hour, we know that the Swiss song Refrain was awarded with Liz Assia, words by Emile Gardaz, music by Gio Vumar, 102 points. The song was repeated amid delirious applause. I don't know if this is true. I don't know if they're just making this up or if they have a source on the inside. Maybe they were able to secretly interview one of the jury members that happened to see the score put together. Regardless, it is the winner of 1956, and of course it is a Eurovision classic done by a classic Eurovision artist. This Assia is known as the Grande Dame of Eurovision, and this song definitely qualifies her to be that. The song is really about the singer missing the years of her youth, and some of the lyrics translated from French read like this. Refrain, color of the rain, regret of my 20s, sorrow, melancholy, not to be a child anymore, but lonesome and far from you, along the roads where you are not. I go crying the loves in my 20s. And thanks to Simon Rogers for the translation hosted on the Digiloo Thrush website. And this song really is depressing, which is very eerie considering how beautiful it sounds in French. If you don't really know the French language well, then you might just purely listen to the sounds of her voice and the instrumentation thinking, oh, this is such a lovely chanson. But if you speak French and understand what she's singing, then you'll see that this song really is depressing. And for such a beautiful song to have such a tragic backstory, I think is the perfect element of beauty and tragedy melded together. And I think even in the 1950s, I think this was a beautiful piece to reflect on. And for me, I don't speak French that fluently. I speak a little bit of it, but not enough to really get into the nitty-gritty of things. But to me, hearing a language that's not in English has a certain beauty to it. And especially if you're like me that likes to hyper focus on particular things when listening to music, I can take the lyrics out of the equation and simply listen to the tones of the voice with the instrumentation and appreciate the beauty that's in there. But at the same time, not recognizing what the lyrics is about, it's missing that tragic element. And so when you hear refrain and you look at the tragedy of the lyrics, I hope you have a little bit of a deeper appreciation for the beauty and the tragedy that is this entry. And so that is this week's song of the week. And so that is ESC 101. It's a podcast where I talk about Eurovision history and obscurity, exploring the crevices of the contest and exploring the unknown and the things that don't get talked about and the things that sometimes get forgotten. And so if you're curious and you'd like to continue on this journey with me, then I highly encourage you to subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening. We also have a Instagram account that is launched, and we're also planning on launching a YouTube channel where we can host some of these recordings if that's your preferred platform. I encourage you to reflect upon some of the things we talk about here. And of course, if you have your own suggestions, then you may, of course, message me on Instagram. We are found at ESC101podcast. And you can also get in touch with us at ESC101podcast@gmail.com. And I'd love to hear your thoughts and comments if you have ideas for future episodes, if there's topics that you'd like us to talk about or things that you'd like to point out, then feel free to message. I'd love to hear your thoughts. And of course, thank you very much for being here. Thank you very much for listening to the premiere episode of ESC 101. On next week's show, we're going to be talking about the 1956 contests and some of its hidden controversies as we explore the Wild West of the very first Eurovision Song Contest. And you may discover that it was actually more organized than you think. Be sure to stay tuned, and thanks for listening. You have been listening to ESC 101. See you next time.